You're listening to From the Public Domain, stories and excerpts from the public domain. I'm your host, Susie Alphins. The Village Oracle by J.L. Harper. Why, Ms. Farley, is it really you? It's been so long since I saw you that I hardly knowed you. Come in and sit down. I was just a-wishing someone would come in. I felt so kind of downsy all morning. I reckon like enough it is my stomach. I thought some of going to see old Dr. Ball about it, but la, I know just what he'd say. He'd look in my tongue and say, coffee, and look cross. He lays half the misery of the world to coffee. Says it's a rank pison to most folks, and that lots of the folks now wearing glasses wouldn't need 'em if they'd let coffee alone. Says it works on the ocular nerves and all that. But I reckon folks here in Granby will go on drinking coffee just the same. You won't mind if I keep right on with my work, will you? Seeing that it ain't nothing but sewing carpet rags. I've got to send my rags to the weaver this week, or she can't weave my carpet until after she comes home from a visit she lows on making to her sister over in Zor. It's just a hit-or-miss strip of carpet I'm making for my small south chamber. I set out to make something kind of fancy with a twisted strip and a chain in 5 colors, but I found I hadn't the right kind of rags to carry it through as I wanted to, so I just decided on a plain hit-or-miss. I don't use the south chamber no great know-how. It's the room my first husband and his first wife and several of his kin all died in, so the associations ain't none too cheering. And I suppose you know about Liddy Baxter losing her husband last week? No? Well, he's went the way of the earth, and Liddy wore my mourning veil and gloves to the funeral. They're as good as they were the day I followed my two husbands to the grave in 'em. When a body pays $2.68 for a mourning veil, it behooves 'em to take care of it, and not switch it out wearing it common as Sally Dodd did hern. If a body happens to marry a second time, as I did, a mourning veil may come in handy, just as mine did. Yes, Liddy's husband did go off real sudden. It was this new fashion trouble, the appendicitis, that took him off. They was just getting ready to operate on him when he went off just as easy as a glove. There's 3,000 life insurance, so Liddy ain't as bereft as some would be. Now, if she'll only have good judgment when she gets the money and not fool it away as Miss Mac did her husband's life insurance. He only had $1,000, and she put half of it on her back before 3 months and put $300 into a piano she couldn't play. She said a piano gave a house such an air. I up and told her that money would soon be all air if she didn't stop fooling it away. I wouldn't want it told as coming from me. But I've heard that it was her that put that advertisement in the paper about a widder with some means wishing to correspond with a gentleman similarly situated with a view to matrimony. I reckon she had about $50 left at that time. I tried to worm something about it out of the postmaster, for of course he'd know about her mail, but he was as close as a clamshell. I reckon one has to be kind of discreet if one is postmaster, but he might have known that anything he told me wouldn't go no farther if he didn't want it to. I know when to speak and when to hold my tongue, if anybody in this town does. Did you know that Myra Dart was going to marry that Ryland chap? It's so. I got it from the best authority. And she's 9 years and 3 months and 5 days older than him. I looked it up in the town history. It's a good deal of a risk for a man to marry a woman that's much older than he is. But my land, it's a good deal of a risk to get married at all nowadays. You never know what you're getting on till it's too late to undo the matter. Seems to me there must be a screw loose somewhere, or matrimony wouldn't be the fizzle it is in so many instances. And it's about 6 of 1, half a dozen of the other when it comes to dividing the blame. You know, my first husband was justice of the peace 5 years, and he had considerable marrying to do. And I saw a good deal of what loose ideas some people had about matrimony. I recollect of one couple coming in to get married one evening. They was both in middle life, and them kind usually acts the silliest, with the exception of a real old pair. They are the beatries for silly acting. Well, my husband never married any couple without making sure that there was no unlawful hindrances in the way of past husbands and wives. And so, he says to the woman, "Have you ever been married before?" And she says, just as flippant, "Yes, but he didn't live but 3 weeks, so it ain't worth speaking of." Now, wasn't that scandalous? It just shows how lightly some folks look on the solemn ordinance of matrimony. I reckon you know that the Porters have a boy at their house? No? Well, they have. He was born at 1:20 last night, or this morning, rather. And old Susan Puffer is to do the nursing. I heard a wagon drive by here lickety-split at most midnight last night, and I says to myself, says I, "I'll bet that's High Porter tearing off for old Susan Puffer." And I got up and wrapped a blanket around me and waited for the wagon to come back. And when it did, I called out, "That you? Hi, and Susan?" It gives them a good deal of a start. But Susan called out that it was her, and I went back to bed. Some folks would have been curious-minded enough to have went right over to the Porters. But I ain't that prying, and I didn't go over till after breakfast this morning. It's a real nice baby, and it's going to be the living spit of High, excepting for its nose, which is its mother's all over. And its mouth is the living counterpart of its grandfather Porter's, and it's got the Davis ears. You know, its mother was a Davis. I hope it won't have to be a bottle-riz baby. I don't care how good these infant foods may be. I don't think that a bottle-riz baby is ever the equal of one that ain't bottle-riz. The Lord must have intended mothers to nurse their babies, or he wouldn't have made them so they could. So I, must you be going? What's your hurry? I'd love to have you set all afternoon. It's so long since you've been here, and I do so enjoy having the neighbors drop in and tell me all that's going on. I never go no place to hear the news. I wish you'd come in real often and talk to me. Looks some like rain. I hope it'll be fair tomorrow, for I 'low on going over to Lucindy Baxter's to spend the day. Me and her went over to Weir Monday and had a real nice all-day visit with Lucindy's married daughter. She's real nicely fixed, and she had 3 kinds of cake besides cookies for tea. Seems to me 1 kind and the cookies would have been plenty. Maybe she wanted to let us see that her husband was a good provider. I went over to Zion Tuesday, and Wednesday me and Nancy Dodd went over to Becky Means and helped her quilt her album quilt. And she had a chicken pie for dinner that went a little ahead of anything I ever ate in the way of chicken pie. Nancy's a good cook anyhow. She gives a kind of a taste of things that only a born cook can give. I'm going over to the fair in Greenfield Friday, so I do come over again soon. I get real lonesome staying to home close as I do, and it's nice to have someone come in and talk to me as you have. Goodbye. Yes, I'll come over soon. But don't you wait for me. Come when you can. I'm always to home. Goodbye. See my little chicks? I put a hen on 13 eggs, and she hatched out every blessed one of them. Wasn't she smart? And she laid all the eggs herself, too. I got another hen coming off on the 10th. Didn't the minister preach beautifully Sunday? I dunno as I ever heard a more upliftin' sermon. I see that his wife has her black silk made up that the Ladies' Society gave her on her birthday. Didn't seem to me it fit real well under the arms. Well, goodbye. Goodbye. They never quarreled. Anonymous. They had been married about 3 weeks and had just gone to housekeeping. He was starting downtown one morning and she followed him to the door. They had their arms wrapped around each other and she was saying, "Oh, Clarence, do you think it possible that the day can ever come when we will part in anger?" "Why, no, little girl, of course not. What put that foolish idea into my little birdie's head, eh?"
"Oh, nothing, dearest. I was only thinking how perfectly dreadful it would be if one of us should speak harshly to the other."
"Well, don't think of such wicked, utterly impossible things any more. We can never, never, never quarrel."
"I know it, darling. Goodbye, you dear old precious. Goodbye. And, oh, wait a second, Clarence. I've written a note to Mama. Can't you run around to the house and leave it for her sometime today?"
"Why, yes, dearie, if I have time."
"If you have time? Oh, Clarence."
"What is it, little girlie?"
"Oh, to say, if you have time, to do almost the very first errand your little wife asks you to do."
Well, I expect to be very busy today.
Too busy to please me? Oh, Clarence, you hurt my feelings so.
Why, child, I...
I'm not a child. I'm a married woman, and I...
There, there, my pet. I...
No, Clarence. If I were your pet, you'd...
But, Mabel, do be reasonable.
Oh, Clarence, don't speak to me so.
Mabel, be sensible and...
Go on, Clarence. Go on. Break my heart.
Stuff and nonsense.
Oh.
What have I said or done?
As if you need to ask. But go. Hate me if you will, Clarence. I...
This is rank nonsense.
I'll go back to Mama if you want me to. She loves me. If you don't...
You must have a brainstorm.
Oh, yes. Sneer at me. Ridicule me. Break my poor heart. Perhaps you'd better strike me.
He bangs the door, goes down the steps on the jump, and races off, muttering something about women being the queerest creatures. Of course, they'll make it up when he comes home, and they'll have many a little tiff in the years to come, and when they grow old, they'll say, "We've lived together 45 years, and in all that time, have never spoken a cross word to each other." The Cyclopedia by Eugene Field. Having lived next door to the Hobart place for going on 30 years, I calculate that I know just about as much as the case as anybody else now on earth, excepting perhaps it's old Judge Baker, and he's so plaguey old and so powerful feeble that he don't know nothing. It seems that in the spring of 47, the year that Si Watson's oldest boy was drowned in West River, there come along a book agent selling volumes and tracts for the diffusion of knowledge. And having got the recommend of the minister and of the select man, he done an all-fired big business in our part of the country. His name was Lemuel Higgins, and he was as likely a talker as ever I heard, barring Lawyer Conkey. And everybody'd allowed that when Conkey was round, he talked so fast that the town pump'd have to be greased every 20 minutes. One of the first of our folks that this Lemuel Higgins struck was Leander Hobart. Leander had just married one of the Peasley girls and had moved into the old homestead on the Plainville Road. Old Deacon Hobart having give up the place to him, the other boys having moved out west, like a lot of old darned fools that they was. Leander was feeling his oats just about this time, and nothing was too good for him. "Addie," says he, "I guess I'll have to lay in a few books for reading in the wintertime, and I've half a notion to subscribe for a cyclopedy. Mr. Higgins here says they're invaluable in a family and that we ought to have 'em, being as how we're likely to have the family by and by."
"Lord's sakes, Leander, how you talk," says Hattie, blushing all over, as brides allus do to hear and tell of such things. "Well, to make a long story short, Leander bargained with Mr. Higgins for a set of them cyclopedies, and he'd signed his name to a long printed paper that showed how he agreed to take a cyclopedy once it in so often, which was to be as often as a new one of the volumes was printed. A cyclopedy isn't printed all at once it, because that would make it cost too much. Consequently, the man that gets it up has it strung along fur apart, so as to hit folks once every year or two, and generally about harvest time. So Leander kind of liked the idea, and he signed the printed paper and made his affidavit to it afore Judge Warner. The first volume of the cyclopedy stood on a shelf in the old secretary in the settin' room about 4 months before they had any use for it. One night, Squire Turner's son come over to visit Leander and Hattie, and they got to talking about apples, and the sort of apples that was the best. Leander allowed that the Rhode Island Greening was the best, but Hattie and a Turner boy stuck up for the Roxbury Russet, until at last a happy idea struck Leander, and says he, "We'll leave it to the cyclopedy, bagosh. Whichever one the cyclopedy says is the best, we'll settle it."
"But you can't find out nothing about Roxbury Russets, no Rhode Island Greenings in our cyclopedy," says Hattie.
Why not, I'd like to know, says Leander, kind of indignant-like.
"'Cause ours ain't got down to the R yet, says Hattie. All ours tells about is things beginning with A.
Well, ain't we talking about apples, says Leander. You aggravate me terrible, Hattie, by insisting on knowing what you don't know nothing about.
Leander went to the secretary and took down the cyclopedia and hunted all through it for apples. But all he could find was apple, see pomology.
How in the thunder can I see pomology, says Leander, when there ain't no pomology to see, gol darn cyclopedia anyhow.
And he put the volume back on the shelf and never sought eyes into it again. That's the way the thing run for years and years. Leander would have gin up the plaguey bargain, but he couldn't. He had signed a printed paper and had sworn to it before a justice of the peace. Higgins would have had the law on him if he had throwed up the trade. The most aggravating feature of it all was that a new one of them cussed cyclopedies was always sure to show up at the wrong time, when Leander was hard up or had just been afflicted some way or other. His barn burnt down two nights before the volume containing the letter B arrived, and Leander needed all his chink to pay for lumber. But Higgins sought back on that affidavit and defied the life out of him.
Never mind, Leander, says his wife, soothing-like. It's a good book to have in the house anyhow, now that we've got a baby.
That's so, says Leander. Babies does begin with B, don't it? You see, their first baby had been born. They named him Peasley Hobart, after Hattie's folks. So seeing as how he was paying for a book that told about babies, Leander didn't begrudge that $5 so very much after all.
Leander, says Hattie, that B-cyclopedia ain't no account. There ain't nothing in it about babies, except, see, maternity.
Well, I'll be gosh darned, says Leander. That was all he said, and he couldn't do nothing at all. For that book agent, Lemuel Higgins, had the deadwood on him, the mean, sneaking critter. So the years passed on. One of the cyclopedies showing up now and then, sometimes every 2 years and sometimes every four, but always at a time when Leander found it pesky hard to give up a fiver. It weren't no use cussing Higgins. Higgins just laughed when Leander allowed that the cyclopedia was no good and that he was being robbed. Meantime, Leander's family was increasing and growing. Little Sari had the hoop and cough dreadful one winter, but the cyclopedia didn't help out at all. Because all it said was, whoopin' cough. See, whoopin' cough. And of course, there weren't no whoopin' cough to see, being as how the W hadn't come yet. Once it, when Hiram wanted to dream the home pasture, he went to the cyclopedia to find out about it. But all he discovered was drain. See, tile. This was in 1859, and the cyclopedia had only got down to G. The cow was sick with lung fever one spell, and Leander later dying to that cussed cyclopedia, 'cause when he went to reading about cows, it told him to see zoology. But what's the use of harrowing up one's feelings, talking and thinking about these things? Leander got so after a while that the cyclopedia didn't worry him at all. He grew to look at it as one of the crosses that human critters has to bear without complaining through this veil of tears. The only thing that bothered him was the fear that maybe he wouldn't live to see the last volume. To tell the truth, this kind of got to be his hobby, and I've hearing him talk about it many times, setting around the stove at the tavern and squirting tobacco juice at the sawdust box. His wife Hattie passed away with the yaller jaunders the winter W come, and all that seemed to reconcile Leander to surviving her was the prospect of seeing the last volume of that cyclopedia. Lemuel Higgins, the book agent, had gone to his everlasting punishment, but his son Hiram had succeeded to his father's business and continued to visit the folks his old man had roped in. By this time, Leander's children had growed up. All on them was marred, and there was numerous grandchildren to amuse the old gentleman. But Leander wasn't to be satisfied with the common things of earth. He didn't seem to take no pleasure in his grandchildren like most men do. His mind was allers sought on something else. For hours and hours, yes, all day long, he'd set out on the front stoop, looking wistfully up the road for that book agent to come along with a cyclopedia.
He didn't want to die till he'd got all the cyclopedias his contract called for. He wanted to have everything straightened out before he passed away. When? Oh, how well I recollect it. When Y come along, he was so overcome that he fell over in a fit of paralysis, and the old gentleman never got over it. For the next 3 years, he drooped and pined and seemed like he couldn't hold out much longer. Finally, he had to take to his bed. He was so old and feeble, but he made him move the bed up against the window so he could watch for the last volume of the cyclopedia. The end come one balmy day in the spring of 87. His life was ebbing powerful fast. The minister was there, and me, and Doc Wilson, and Judge Baker, and most of the family. Loving hands smoothed the wrinkled forehead and brushed back the long, scant white hair. But the eyes of the dying man was sought upon that piece of road over which the cyclopedia man always come. All to once it, a bright and joyful look come into them eyes. And old Leander riz up in the bed and says, "It's come."
"What is it, father?"
asked his daughter Sari, sobbing like. "Hush," says the minister solemnly. "He sees the shining gates of the New Jerusalem."
"No, no,"
cried the aged man. "It's the cyclopedia, the letter Z. It's coming." And sure enough, the door opened, and in walked Higgins. He tottered rather than walked, for he had grown old and feeble in his wicked profession.
"Here's the Z cyclopedia, Mr. Hobart," says Higgins. Leander clutched it. He hugged it to his panting bosom. Then, stealing one pale hand under the pillar, he drew out a faded banknote and gave it to Higgins.
"I thank thee for this boon," says Leander,
rolling his eyes up devoutly. Then he gave a deep sigh.
"Hold on," cried Higgins excitedly. "You've made a mistake. It isn't the last."
But Leander didn't hear him. His soul had fled from its mortal tenement and had soared, rejoicing to realms of everlasting bliss.
"He is no more," says Doc Wilson, metaphorically.
"Then who are his heirs?"
asked that mean critter Higgins.
"We be," says the family. "Do you conjointly and severally acknowledge and assume the obligation of deceased to me?" he asked him.
"What obligation?" asked Peasley Hobart, stern-like.
"Deceased died owing me for a cyclopedia,"
says Higgins. "That's a lie," says Peasley. "We seen him pay you for the Z."
"But there's another one to come,"
says Higgins.
"Another?"
they all asked.
"Yes, the index," says he.
"So there was." The freckle-faced girl. She entertains a visitor while her mother is dressing. Anonymous.
"Ma's upstairs, changing her dress,"
said the freckle-faced little girl, tying her doll's bonnet strings and casting her eye about for a tidy large enough to serve as a shawl for that double-jointed young person.
"Oh, your mother needn't dress up for me,"
replied the female agent of the Missionary Society, taking a self-satisfied view of herself in the mirror. "Run up and tell her to come down just as she is in her everyday clothes and not stand on ceremony."
"Oh, but she hasn't got on her everyday clothes. Ma was all dressed up in her new brown silk, 'cause she expected Miss Diamond today. Miss Diamond always comes over here to show off her nice things, and Ma don't mean to get left. When Ma saw you coming, she said, 'The Dickens,' and I guess she was mad about something. Ma said if you saw her new dress, she'd have to hear all about the poor heathen who don't have silk. And you'd ask her for more money to buy hymn books to send to them. Say, do the nigger ladies use hymn book leaves to do their hair up and make it frizzy? Ma says she guesses that's all the good the books do them, if they ever get any books. I wish my doll was a heathen."
"Why, you wicked little girl, why do you want a heathen doll?" inquired the missionary lady,
taking a mental inventory of the new things in the parlor to get material for a homily on worldly extravagance.
So folks would send her lots of nice things to wear and feel sorry to have her going about naked. I ain't a wicked girl either, 'cause Uncle Dick, you know Uncle Dick, he's been out west, and he says I'm a holy terror, and he hopes I'll be an angel pretty soon. Ma'll be down in a minute, so you needn't take your coat off. She said she'd box my ears if I asked you to. Ma's putting on that old dress she had last year, 'cause she said she didn't want you to think she was able to give much this time, and she needed a new muff worse than the Queen of the Cannonball Islands needed religion. Uncle Dick says you ought to go to the islands, 'cause you'd be safe there. And the natives'd be sorry they were such sinners if anybody would send you to 'em. He says he never seen a heathen hungry enough to eat you, lest 'twas a blind one, and you'd set a blind pagan's teeth on edge, so he'd never hanker after any more missionary. Uncle Dick's awfully funny, and makes Pa and Ma die laughing sometimes.
Your Uncle Richard is a bad, depraved man, and ought to have remained out west, where his style is appreciated. He sets a bad example for little girls like you.
Oh, I think he's nice. He showed me how to slide down the banisters, and he's teaching me to whistle when Ma ain't round. That's a pretty cloak you've got, ain't it? Do you buy all your good clothes with missionary money? Ma says you do.
Just then, the freckle-faced little girl's Ma came into the parlor and kissed the missionary lady on the cheek and said she was delighted to see her, and they proceeded to have a real sociable chat. The little girl's Ma can't understand why a person who professes to be so charitable as the missionary agent does should go right over to Miss Diamond's and say such ill-natured things as she did, and she thinks the missionary is a double-faced gossip. Spatially Jim, Anonymous. I was mighty good-looking when I was young, pert and black-eyed and slim, with fellers a-courtin' me Sunday nights, especially Jim. The likeliest one of 'em all was he, chipper and handsome and trim. But I tossed up my head and made fun of the crowd, especially Jim. I said I hadn't no opinion o' men, and I wouldn't take stock in him. But they kept up a-comin' in spite of my talk, especially Jim. I got so tired of having him round, especially Jim. I made up my mind I'd settle down and take up with him. So we was married one Sunday in church. 'Twas crowded full to the brim. 'Twas the only way to get rid of 'em all, especially Jim. You've been listening to From the Public Domain. I'm your host, Susie Elthens.